Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, and 88.1 KFCF in Fresno.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, June 14th, 2016. This is Up Front. I'm Brian Edwards Tiecker. On today's show,
never before in the history of Oakland's federal oversight has the court taken the authority of an investigation away from the department.
Investigative journalists Ollie Winston and Darwin Bond Graham lay out the scandal that took down the police chief of Oakland.
This was an open secret. Lots of people knew this was going on for a long time.
It's a prostitution scandal involving multiple officers from multiple agencies, some of them sergeants and captains, some trading sex for warnings about stings.
That is the sort of thing that gets people killed.
How far did it go? And how high up was the cover-up? How much is extraordinary? And how much is typical when the police prostitutes? It's all next, after the news. 7:08 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards Tiecker. We're going to spend almost the entire show this morning talking to the two journalists who exposed a scandal that spread through several local police departments, that has already taken down Oakland's police chief, and that completely changed the playing field in city politics on the debate over creating a civilian police oversight commission. But first, lest we leave yesterday's coverage of the Orlando shooting at the level of raw emotion and reaction, we wanted to bring you a report on things people are doing. Yesterday, a collection of LGBT leaders, Muslim leaders, and lawmakers called a press conference to launch a new push for gun controls in California. Christopher Martinez has more.
The mass shooting in Orlando has sparked a wave of reaction around the country, ranging from rallies and community events to Twitter messages from politicians focused on the presidential election. In San Francisco, LGBT and Muslim rights activists joined gun safety groups and state lawmakers to condemn the shooting and to urge the passage of gun safety bills pending in the state legislature. Democratic Assemblymember Rob Bonta is a Democrat from Oakland. He spoke at a news conference at the state building in San Francisco.
After the tragedies in Newtown and San Bernardino, our community demanded action. And this week, approximately another 50 families will be planning funerals for their loved ones. It seems like every day almost, collectively, as a nation, we walk around with that anxious, pit-in-the-stomach feeling of when the next mass shooting will occur. Will it occur in an office? In a place of worship, in a classroom, in a nightclub, maybe a movie theater.
Bonta says we mourn together, and now we must act together. He's the author of one of a series of gun control bills facing votes in the legislature in the coming days. The measures include bills that would limit gun sales to one per month per person, expand court restraining orders to keep high-risk people from getting firearms, and close a loophole in California's assault weapons ban. Paula Hawthorne is with the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. She says sensible gun laws save lives.
Those 49 people who were shot because he had an automatic weapon that could shoot fast. You listen to anybody who was there and they say it was bang, 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 bang. Of course it was. He had an automatic weapon which should not have been in his hands. And the reason it was in his hands is because we have gutless legislators. We do, at the national level.
The Orlando shootings targeted a gay nightclub during a Latino night, and the vast majority of victims were Latino men. The shooter was a New York-born citizen whose parents were from Afghanistan. He had worked briefly as a prison guard in the Florida Department of Corrections and later as a private security guard. His attack on a gay nightclub in Orlando killed 49 people, making it the nation's largest mass shooting of the 20th century. Muslim and LGBT groups have joined in condemning the attack and showing solidarity with each other. Rebecca Rolfe is director of the San Francisco LGBT Center.
We have a significant problem with hate in this country, and we have a significant problem with violence in this country. And all these issues are tremendously enmeshed, and we can't pull them apart and say, this is just homophobia pure and simple. This is just racism pure and simple. This is just, you know, religion and religious bias pure and simple. I think that these things are all deeply interconnected, and we really have to address them as a whole and understand that particularly most of us have complex identities, and that if we can't address those issues as a whole, then we can't welcome people into this world in their whole and full and beautiful selves.
Sarah Bilou is director of the San Francisco office of the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE. She says Muslim activists are joining to show solidarity with the LGBT community in much the same way local LGBT activists helped CARE when its local office was attacked.
In some ways, this issue is really complicated. It's the war on terror versus hate crimes versus anti-Latino issues, like, and homophobia and hate. It's so many things colliding, gun control. And at the same time, it's really simple, right? Is that homophobic hate violence is abhorrent and should be condemned. People should not have access to weapons this dangerous, period.
The Muslim, LGBT, and gun control activists are supporting several gun control bills in the Senate and Assembly, including a measure that would strengthen California's assault weapons ban by banning the so-called bullet button that allows rapid reloading of powerful rifles. The gun bills have already narrowly passed their first votes in the Senate and Assembly. The measures will now go to hearings in the Assembly and Senate Public Safety Committees on Tuesday. Reporting from the State Building in San Francisco, I'm Christopher Martinez.
You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards Tiekert. In local news, the Bay Area just lost its second police chief in the space of a month. Late Thursday, Oakland Mayor Libby Schaff announced that Oakland Police Chief Sean Wendt had resigned. Before she did, our next guests were already reporting that his termination was imminent. And after she did, they published an investigation into a sweeping sex and prostitution scandal involving high-ranking officials from multiple agencies. A scandal that may have involved one officer's suicide and the death of his wife. A scandal that they say brought down Chief Wendt. Darwin Bongram and Ollie Winston published that story on Friday on the website of the East Bay Express. It'll be in tomorrow's print edition. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So I want to kind of start the story at the beginning as it happened. And it starts with someone named Celeste Guap. Who is she?
It's not her real name. And we're not using her real name for reasons that should be obvious. But she is the daughter of an Oakland Police Department dispatcher. She's a Bay Area. She's an East Bay resident. And according to what she's told us, she has been a sexually exploited a child prostitute in the East Bay since she was very young. She somehow ended up meeting Oakland police officers, and that's how this unfolded.
Not somehow. There was a specific way she met her first Oakland police officer, Brendan O'Brien. How did that roll out?
Well, the story that she's told us is that one night she was out on East 14th Street, International Boulevard, around south of Fruitvale. And this strip of International Boulevard has been known for a long time as an epicenter of prostitution in the Bay Area, and particularly underage prostitution. And she told us that she was running away from her pimp when O'Brien and his partner pulled up in their patrol car and intervened. And she told us that he saved her. So they exchanged numbers. He didn't detain her. He knew that she was underage. He didn't detain her. He didn't try and, you know, get her in connection with services that could maybe help her out. Oakland police have a long-standing relationship with a number of nonprofit organizations and public health, certainly the public health department in the Alameda County, that their aim is to get girls like this out of that life, get them counseling, get them hooked up with housing, get them hooked up with potentially, you know, whatever sort of treatment programs they need.
And he didn't do it.
No, he didn't do it. So they exchanged numbers. They ran into each other again when she was out on the stroll, as she called that stretch of East 14th. And they struck up a relationship. And this was in the beginning of 2015. O'Brien's wife, Irma Huerta Lopez, died under mysterious circumstances in
June 2014.
She died from what the police department and the sheriff's department later determined was a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. They released that autopsy report in May, the day of our first story. about Brennan O'Brien and his wife's death came out. Both O'Brien and his wife had gunshot residue on their hands. We have requested the entire case file. We know for a fact that they investigated her death as a homicide. And her family believes that O'Brien killed her.
So this is backstory because this would have been before Brendan O'Brien met Celeste Glop. He's possibly implicated in his wife's death.
Yeah, he's briefly investigated for possibly killing her by his own police department. He's very quickly exonerated of that, according to the records and interviews that we've done with the police department. He goes back to work. He patrols East Oakland for the next, you know, half year or so. Then he meets this girl on the streets.
So they exchange phone numbers. He does not make any official record of his contact with her, doesn't put her in touch with any services. What's the nature of their relationship from that point forward?
After the second contact, she told us that they saw each other again and they struck up a sexual relationship. And after that, O'Brien apparently introduced her to his squad mates out of the Eastmont substation, Officer Terrell Smith and Officer James Ty.
Yeah, and then
when you say relationship, you mean a sexual relationship?
Absolutely.
Well, and at this point, she's 17 years old, so it's statutory rape. And she, it's important to continually bring the background of who she is in, into this, because she, again, she said she started working as young as 12 years old as a commercially sexually exploited child in the East Bay in Richmond and in Oakland. So she's 17 at this time. But even when she turns 18 later on, which we'll get to, and she's having other relationships with other cops, it's important to remember that she was a commercially sexually exploited child for much of her life. So even when she's 18, she's working as a sex worker, and that's her background.
Okay, but commercially sexually exploited child is how you're describing her.
That's how the law actually characterizes minors who engage in sex work in California and federally.
How does she describe her relationship with these police officers?
She told us that she dated Brendan O'Brien.
Dated is the language she uses.
Yeah, dated is the exact word that she used. She would say that she hooked up with some of the officers. She called most of the officers she hooked up with tricks because in sex work, you know, your clients, you know, in the East Bay, sex workers do not refer to clients as Johns. That's more of a law enforcement thing.
Term, yeah.
It's an old-fashioned kind of law enforcement term. They're known as tricks these days. So she said most of her police officer clients were tricks. She says she did not take monetary. She hasn't told us that she's taken monetary payment from any of them, but she did talk about feeling protected by them, and also some of them gave her sensitive law enforcement information.
What kind of sensitive information?
They told her when and where prostitution stings would happen on the day of, morning of, told her to be off the street. She'd say, oh, is it going to be hot out tonight? They said, yep, stay out. Stay out of trouble. Stay off East 14th. Stay off Fruitvale from this stretch. You'll be good otherwise. But they leaked information about undercover operations to her, which is an offense for termination in the Oakland Police Department. It is extremely risky for the officers, for the potential targets of the investigation, for anybody who might be in that area, because if that information gets out to somebody who may be armed and may, you know, not want a cop to be around, like a pimp, you know, they could take a shot at them or many, and things could go south really quickly.
So at this point, the officers you have named are Brendan O'Brien, that officer who first made contact with Celeste Guap when she's a minor, his squad mates Terrell Smith and James Ty. But the cast of characters keeps expanding in your narrative. The next person who comes in is an officer, Giovanni Loverde. How does he come into the picture?
She told us that she met Officer Loverde on Facebook. So she's and at this point, she said that she was 18, although it's unclear exactly what age she is at this time. But she's using Facebook to set up meetings with some of her clients, and she meets Officer Giovanni Loverde. Loverde then introduces her to another Oakland police officer, Luis Roman. They trade extensive messages over Facebook and through their cell phone text messaging. And this goes on for months and months on end. It goes on even after Brendan O'Brien commits suicide. And his suicide, many believe, is directly linked to his relationship to Celeste Guap.
To the prospect of being exposed.
Yes.
She shared with you documentary evidence of these relationships, including screenshots of her text message threads with OPD officers. Why did she release all this information to you?
I think at this point, she feels like she's been betrayed by the department.
She's told us that.
Yeah.
She said that she grew up in OPD. It's like her family. She knows a lot of people there. She's very close with all of them. She told us in a telephone conversation that she felt betrayed and used by OPD.
And I think there is some point, there's a degree of realization in her. You know, we've kind of been having conversations with her for quite some time, and it's becoming apparent that she's understanding that she has been a victim of this sort of conduct since she was very young. And she understands that she, you know, was passed around at a certain point between O'Brien and his squad mates, and they should know, and they knew better. As police officers, as adults, as individuals who received extensive training on how to deal with sexually exploited minors in that particular area of Oakland where they were patrolling.
But, okay, I mean, here's the thing that's remarkable to me about this story. It's not like she met one crooked cop,
right,
and then he introduced her to the other crooked cops,
right,
he knows. She had multiple points of contact with police,
right,
that resulted in these relationships, independent of one another.
Right.
Which suggests that there's like a widespread practice or culture within the department, not just a few bad
apples. Not just the department, the sheriff's office, the Richmond Police Department. We have found a federal police agent who works out of Stockton who met her through Instagram.
After this all broke,
after the first Cron 4 TV news story, this guy the very next day contacted her through Instagram, and they went to the hot tubs that are right down the street here on University Avenue. And that was when they hooked up for the first time here in Berkeley.
That's the same block as KPFA studio.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then they went out to Vacaville and stayed in his apartment. And so something is going on with law enforcement in the East Bay, something very disturbing.
We're speaking to Darwin Bongram and Ollie Winston. They're investigative journalists who broke the news that Oakland was about to fire Police Chief Sean Wendt last week. And then as soon as Oakland announced his resignation, they blew the lid off the elaborate scandal behind it. I want to walk through some of those other points of contact with law enforcement, because I think they're pretty revealing. And one is a police officer whose name you've not totally confirmed yet, but he's someone that she took to calling Superman. He's one of the officers who began tipping her off about prostitution stings. How did they meet? What happened?
So one night she was coming back from San Francisco on BART, and she told us she was pretty drunk. And she gets off the train at West Oakland. She's lost. She's walking around, doesn't know where she is. She's trying to get back to her home. And she sees a black and white roll up. She sees a police car roll up, and she goes and contacts the officer and says, "Hey, look, I'm lost. I need help getting home." And the officer is an Oakland police officer. She told us that much. She described him physically, white, heavy set, not fat, but heavy, chunky, mid to late 30s. He called her a cab. She gets home. She wakes up, looks at her phone, sees a text message. "Hey, did you get home okay?" She says, "Who's this?" He says, "Oh, we met last night." He never tells her name. He never tells her his name. But she told us that on his voicemail, when she would call him, because they struck up a relationship after that, and they ended up sleeping together.
In hotels, in a Barcadero near the airport.
Mm-hmm. So he would refer to himself as BJ, right? So we had the phone number. We have her text message, which we ran in the article about him tipping her off to an undercover prostitution sting on International and in the area of Fruitvale.
I actually want to read from that, because it's pretty revealing about what the nature of the relationship is. So he texts to her, "Be safe today. Want some advice?" She writes back, "Tell me, handsome." He writes, stay off East 14th from Fruitvale to 42nd tonight. There's a UC operation. That would mean undercover.
That's right.
She writes back, damn, LOL, and then follows up with a couple emojis. He writes back, no, you're not. Just giving you a heads up. She writes back, thank you, Daddy.
Right.
Yeah. So we confirmed that operation, that there was a sting on that night. Absolutely.
What do you know about the identity of the officer who's on the other end of these text messages?
Yeah, so this gets into some very fortuitous reporting methods. We literally, you know, have this information in our hands on Friday afternoon. Ali calls the number, the cell phone number. An officer answers the phone. Ali informs him that he would like to speak with him. The officer says, you need to contact Public Information Officer Watson. That's Public Information Officer John L. Watson in the Oakland Police Department. Now, most people wouldn't know that that's the protocol unless they're an Oakland cop. So then this guy hangs up on Ali. So then later in the afternoon...
I've been texting him the whole day, too, by the way. We're going to run this story. We have this information. We know you did X and Y, X, Y, right before deadline. This is your last chance, officer.
Yeah, and then... shortly before our deadline, Ali gets an email from Officer John L. Watson of the Oakland Police Department. Please do not contact Officer Bunton. So we look at the roster.
So the person who's supposed to control press exposure for the police department accidentally revealed the identity of the officer you were calling.
She doxed him.
It appears so. We looked up Bunton in the roster of current Oakland cops. And it's, was it Brian?
Brian J. Bunton. He joined the police department through the 171st Academy last year.
So BJ, Superman. It appears so. The evidence strongly points to that.
It's his phone number. He answered it. We didn't reach out to her about that particular officer. We sent her a list of the officers that we were going to name in the article. And his name was not on them. We ran through the roster beforehand trying to sort that out. And we skipped right over it, even though his initials should have tipped us.
So this is an officer. You have published a screenshot of him texting a tip about an undercover sting operation to a person who might have wound up being a target of that operation. What's his status now? Do you know if he's on leave, under investigation?
We don't know about Officer Bunton's status, but on Sunday, the Oakland Police Department announced that another officer has been placed on administrative leave. They haven't identified him.
That's the voice of Ali Winston, a freelance investigative journalist. Also with us in studio, Darwin Bond Graham, staff writer at the East Bay Express. And they've just co-authored an explosive investigation into a massive sex and prostitution scandal that apparently brought down the chief of the Oakland Police Department. The story is already having major impacts. On tonight's city council agenda, for instance, there were two dueling proposals for asking voters to approve a new civilian oversight body for the police. Since this story broke, the weaker of those two proposals has been withdrawn by its backers. It's coming up on 7:30 in the morning. You're listening to 94.1 KPFA. The program is Up Front. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiekert, and we are going to continue our conversation about the scandal, the investigation, and what it all means when we come back after the news.
I'm Eileen Alfandari with KPFA News Headlines. An official says the FBI is investigating reports that the Orlando massacre shooter had been a regular at the LGBT nightclub he attacked, and that he'd used gay dating apps. The comments follow reports and comments from patrons at the Orlando Club Pulse that Mateen was a regular there and tried to pick up men. One man talked to the Orlando Sentinel.
He was drinking with another guy at one time. A lot of it don't make sense, and we're never going to know.
Another person said Mateen used to try to pick up men. Another said Mateen had messaged him on a gay dating app. A package of bills to strengthen California's gun safety laws comes up for a vote today in the wake of the Orlando massacre. Lawmakers are hoping that the massacre will help impel other lawmakers to vote for the package. French authorities are calling a deadly attack on two police officials a terrorist attack. Police say a 25-year-old French man armed with a knife attacked the officials in the home the man and woman shared in a Paris suburb. Authorities say LaRosie Abala also recorded the attack, which he posted live on Facebook, and at one point appeared puzzled over what to do with the couple's three-year-old child who was spared. The attacker was killed. Authorities have detained two other people. Voters in the District of Columbia could hand Hillary Clinton a final victory in the last primary election of the 2016 presidential campaign season. Clinton is expected to do well in D.C. Bernie Sanders has campaigned for D.C. statehood. The Obama administration is trying to make it easier for students who've been misled or defrauded by their colleges to have their loans forgiven. The Education Department says a proposed rule would lay out a clear relief process for borrowers who believe they were lied to about job prospects after college or otherwise deceived in order to enroll in the school. The proposal follows the collapse last year of Corinthian colleges. The Education Department continues to vet thousands of requests from Corinthian students for relief from their federal loans. Weather forecast for the San Francisco Bay Area. Patchy morning fog and clouds. Partial afternoon clearing. Windy. Highs in the mid-60s to lower 70s. In Fresno and the central San Joaquin Valley, sunny. Highs 81 to 87 degrees. I'm Eileen Alfandari. More news on 94.1 at 8 o'clock.
Speaking with Darwin Bond Graham and Ollie Winston, they broke the news that Oakland was about to fire its police chief, Sean Wendt, before his resignation was officially announced. The next day, they blew the lid off the elaborate scandal that they say is behind that resignation. You rattle off a list of officers from Oakland, from other departments, some of them retired, some of them high-ranking, sergeants, captains, who came to be involved with Celeste Guap. How widespread was this kind of relationship?
I don't think we actually know the true scope of this yet, and here's why. When this young woman, when this girl originally was interviewed by Oakland Police Department investigators, they did not take her story seriously. They did not press her on which officers were having sex with her, which officers committed statutory rape with her. The investigation was not conducted properly. The evidence that we have right now, it appears that the Oakland Police Department did not conduct a vigorous investigation to get to the bottom of this. There may, in fact, have been a cover-up. Other police agencies in the region, the Alameda County Sheriff's Office, the Richmond Police Department, other law enforcement agencies, the federal police agency I mentioned earlier, we've contacted all of them. We've sent them evidence, screenshots, and other things related to the conduct of their officers here. From the very beginning, none of these law enforcement agencies have taken this very seriously. As far as we know, we've been told repeatedly by the Alameda County Sheriff's Office, for example, that there's nothing really wrong here.
She's never come to us with any sort of evidence of misconduct. We have no way of knowing this.
Right.
That's what they said in response to our most recent story 2 weeks after the first story implicating Alameda County deputies in this ran.
Some of the officer involvement with Celeste Guap was very public on publicly available social media accounts.
Absolutely.
Including with a Captain Richard Orozco and a retired Sergeant Byron Reed.
Right.
What was going on with them?
So with Sergeant Reed, there was a lot of back and forth, pretty salacious back and forth over social media between herself and the sergeant. He's since retired from the police force. She claims that they never slept together. They were working up to that point. But she said that that never happened. However, we do know from very good sourcing that Byron Reed has been investigated previously for his conduct with minors. He served in the Special Victims Unit, which typically deals with juvenile victims and with victims of sex crimes. And we have it on very good authority that he was previously investigated by Internal Affairs for some sort of improper conduct towards minors.
When we began sweeping up social media accounts a couple months ago and collecting all of this evidence in our files, we did notice that Captain Rick Orozco of the Oakland Police Department was friends with her on Facebook, followed her on Instagram. She followed him back on Instagram. She had liked a lot of his postings on Facebook. There didn't appear to be much more in the record there that we could find, but we had heard through other sources that there may have been something to this. So we contacted Rick Orozco through Facebook. He subsequently deleted his social media accounts.
All of them.
All of them. So we don't really know what's going on there. He retired from the department in early 2015, though.
Darwin, earlier when you were describing the failings of internal investigations, you said there may have been a cover-up. What's the evidence for that?
Well, the primary piece of evidence is that Police Chief Sean Wendt was fired by the court monitor last Friday. Court monitor is very angry with the Oakland Police Department. From what we've heard, the reason that Wendt was fired has to do with the botching of this investigation. On March 23rd, federal judge Thelton Henderson, who oversees the negotiated settlement agreement with the Oakland Police Department, he wrote an unprecedented and very mysterious order, and it was posted online on the federal court website, and it said that irregularities in an investigation of a particular internal affairs case called into question the city of Oakland and the Oakland Police Department's ability to demonstrate that it could, in fact, fulfill the terms of the negotiated settlement agreement. Now, I'm using very technical language here, but basically what the judge said is this internal affairs investigation is apparently being screwed up so bad that I'm going to have to do something really serious here to intervene and make sure it gets done. So what he did was he appointed Warshaw, he directed Warshaw, the court monitor, to take over the investigation and make sure that it was finished properly. At that point, Warshaw then had a deputy chief in the police department, John Lois, take over the investigation and report directly to him, not to Wendt.
So he created a channel around the police.
Yeah, this has never happened in the police department's history. Yeah. This is the backstory. Oakland Police is under a 13-year-old consent decree under the federal court to reform its internal practices for investigation and for accountability because of the Ryder scandal, because a prior corruption scandal that basically, if you've ever seen the movie Training Day, think about that just in Oakland, not in L.A. Massive civil rights abuses, use of force, false arrest, framing folks. So I've reported on the consent decree for about 8 years, right? Never before in the history of Oakland's federal oversight has the court taken the authority of an investigation away from the department, the authority of an internal affairs investigation. Internal affairs is at the center. It is the core of the federal reforms to Oakland Police. The reason why the Ryders didn't get caught is because IA never investigated them.
IA is internal affairs.
Yes. The internal affairs complaints, these are just skills, these are turds, these are these smokers out on the street. We don't care about what they say. We don't care if they're saying these cops are jacking them up, if they're corrupt. Forget them. These guys are good cops. They're productive. They're taking bad guys off the street.
That's the reason the department was literally taken over by the court for all these years.
So now we have this whole media storm in 2014, 2015, after Libby Schaff comes to office, after Sean Wendt takes charge of the police department. He's actually chosen by Warshaw.
Right.
Handpicked by Warshaw in 2013.
The court-appointed monitor
to take over the police department.
Right.
And you have to remember that the monitor gets to choose. He gets final say on who actually gets hired and fired for the PD because Oakland PD messed up so bad during Occupy. They've been on the border of getting taken over by the federal court for 3 years.
The reputation of Sean Wendt up until this point was that he had made more progress than any previous police chief in implementing the reforms that would satisfy the court.
Right. Sean made his bones in IA. Sean was internal affairs for years. He ran the internal affairs division. He was not well-liked in the department because he was part of the rat squad.
He was feared and hated by many in the department because he was so genuinely interested in ferreting out corruption, brutality, and misconduct and punishing officers for it.
And why sit on it in this case?
Because his wife reached out to Celeste at some point in 2015. In June of 2015, we don't know why she reached out, but she reached out to her through Facebook and through whatever conversation, whatever the nature may be. You also have to remember that Celeste she's the daughter of a police dispatcher. She's grown up in the police department. That's her community.
And she's reported what was going on to at least one person in that department, a friend of her mother's named Leroy Johnson.
That happened after she told Julie Wendt about her relationship with Brendan O'Brien. This is when she was 17. So we don't know why Julie Wendt reached out to her. Julie informed her. And she informed Julie that she'd been sleeping with O'Brien since she was sleeping with O'Brien at the time. And Sean found out, and he did not tell Internal Affairs. He didn't tell the monitor. And under the requirements of this federal consent decree, if an officer knows about any potential or alleged misconduct, they are required to report it.
Here's the big picture. Here's the gist of it. And we don't know that this is a fact yet, but from where we're sitting, this is what it looks like. The Oakland Police Department, for the last 2 years, the buzz has been that they're going to get out from federal court oversight, that they're going to complete the negotiated settlement agreement. We hear that the chief over the last year was pushing back against the court. Hey, isn't it time that we get out from court oversight? It's time. You got the political leadership in the city saying it's time we exit federal court oversight.
And to be clear, if Sean Wendt had led the police department out from under court oversight, that would have been a feather in his cap that made the rest of his career in law enforcement.
It probably would have, and it would also have covered up this entire thing. And the public would never have known it would have happened at all.
Well, do you think he had an interest in sitting on the investigation? Because if this bubbled up to the court's attention,
that's precisely what it looks like.
Prolong the oversight.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, right?
Because it implicates him directly, because his wife knew and he knew. And the problem is, she contacted Celeste and learned about this relationship in June of 2015. Brendan killed himself in September of 2015. His suicide set the entire chain of events rolling. Warshaw didn't know about this case, about Brendan's suicide and all the backstory behind it independently. Someone dropped a dime.
Our guests are Darwin Bongram and Ollie Winston. They are an investigative journalism duo who broke the news that Oakland was about to fire Police Chief Sean Wendt, and who have published in the East Bay Express a stunning narrative about the sweeping sex and prostitution scandal that led up to that turn of events. How and when did you two get tipped to the story unfolding around Celeste Guap?
We can't say exactly how, and we can't say exactly when, but one of the disturbing things about this whole scandal is that this was an open secret for a long time.
It was on public social media accounts.
It was on public social media accounts, but not only that, people were talking about it. Retired members, current members of the department, people knew this was going on. Lots of people knew this was going on for a long time.
In the department, outside the department, in city government, this was an open secret.
I have to say, I looked her up, Celeste Guap, at least her screen name. She has a exceptionally large social media presence, more than 20,000 followers on Facebook when I looked, which was before most of this broke. I guess it raises the question, like, how many cases of police officers involved with prostitution do you think there are that don't hit the radar because they're not entering such a public sphere?
So, in this area, I've spoken with people who have knowledge about sex work, who have knowledge about the nature of the relationship between law enforcement and the girls who work on the street, and sometimes the boys who work on the street. And it keeps coming up that these sex workers are solicited by police officers while they're on duty for sex.
That this is a common practice.
It happens. It happens more than once, and departments have had to investigate their own for this. And at least one person has been terminated in recent years for this.
And what about the quid pro quo relationship wherein a police officer tips a prostitute he's involved with about stings?
That's extremely alarming. That is the sort of thing that gets people killed, that can get people killed, and we're not certain how widespread that is, but we have three officers, two of whom we've been able to identify, and we've published their names in the story, who have done this. In other departments, you have similar relationships between drug dealers and police departments. You can look in Fresno. The deputy police chief was recently fired down there and is going to face criminal charges for doing that with a drug dealer. But we're not certain, and honestly, at this point, it should be the responsibility of the local district attorneys and the local U.S. attorney to look into those allegations. And to this point, it doesn't seem like they are.
You published the name of everybody you've been able to identify as involved with Celeste Guam.
Oh, we actually didn't.
We withheld names.
You withheld we've held that you mentioned in the story.
Right, but we know the names of the Richmond police officers.
And
we
know the names, too.
Why haven't you reported them?
We haven't been able to confirm their relationship with her independently, with the officers who we published in, whose names we published in Oakland. We've either been able to confirm their identities through documentation we've obtained or with independent interviews. And in the case of the Richmond officers, we haven't been able to identify them through separate means aside from her letting us know their names. However, we took this directly to the Richmond Police Department. I spoke with the Richmond Chief of Police on Friday. They're well aware of it.
And the District Attorney of Alameda County has an investigator today, Monday, who will interview Guap on the record, and she's going to tell him everything she told us.
We're still waiting for a comment from them, by the way.
So what I was winding up to is there is one retired OPD captain admitted to you he paid Guap for sex, and then after admitting, asked you to keep his name off the record. Which means you were under no ethical obligation to keep his name off the record.
Well, you didn't
agree to give him anonymity ahead of time, did you?
We didn't. That was a very tough conversation to have. Neither of us, we do not think that sex work should be criminalized. We don't agree with that as a policy for the United States, for California, for Alameda County. So if two consenting adults get together and one of them pays for sex, we personally don't see anything wrong with that. Now, this involves a woman who was exploited as a child child for years and years. This retired captain on the phone told us that he really had no knowledge of that. He claimed that she told him that she was 20 years old when they met up in the hotel and paid for sex. And so we took that story at face value, and we didn't publish his name.
He specifically begged you not to on grounds that it would give him a heart attack.
We have to take his word for that. To be honest with you, the conduct of if it is true that she told him she was 20 years old at the time, he should know better. As a former police officer, he's earning a six-figure pension from the city of Oakland. He shouldn't be spending that money on, if he chooses to spend his money in that way, sure, but...
Engaging in conduct that his former colleagues, his own department, spends millions of dollars a year...
In
federal grant money, dedicating huge resources to trying to address that problem.
And this is also... The public perception about the department's work towards sex trafficking is that they are very hard on it. I mean, they've gone so far as to put the faces of people who they claim have paid for sex on billboards around the city
right.
to publicly shame them. And now it comes out that a slew of officers... all the officers we've been able to identify, by the way, have been hired since the end of 2013. They're all brand new. They all should know damn well better than this because they've received training.
So this is not some corrupt old guard. These are the people coming in all the departments under court oversight.
This is a full spectrum of every rank of officer in the Oakland Police Department, all the way up to the level of captain, and the chief apparently knew this stuff was going on.
So this raises like a bunch of policy questions, right? The Oakland Police Department's under the harshest type of federal oversight that has been imposed on an American police agency to date in this country, and it apparently hasn't fixed things. The Oakland City Council is poised tonight to take up the question of creating a civilian oversight body for the police department. Will it change anything?
Genuinely, I don't think taking away control of the police department from the mayor's office at this point will rectify what happened in this scandal. You are going to see action on part of the federal court. This case has gone beyond the existing measures that the United States has established to date on how to reform police departments. It's clear that they have failed utterly in this case. And, as recently as the middle of 2015, you had articles about the Oakland Police Department saying, oh, this is how a dirty department gets clean. How to reform a dirty department. Sean Wendt is part of the team, or was until very recently. He was part of the team investigating the alleged civil rights violations of the Chicago Police Department. You know, this is how this he was part of the 21st century policing task force that President Obama put together after the Ferguson civil disturbance. This is the degree to which the Oakland Police Department had burnished its image, and all the while this sort of conduct was festering underneath. I mean, that to me, to Darwin, to our editor, that is about as egregious as it gets. And it also raises the question, how much did the mayor know?
What do you think, Darwin?
I agree with all that 100%. But I also think there's only so much that the city and OPD can do when we as a society have criminalized sex work to the extent that we have. We've created the situation where sex workers are extremely vulnerable to the use of force by people in the illicit economy, by pimps, and also they're extremely vulnerable to cops. And so what do we expect is going to happen in our society when children, when young women, when boys are walking the streets and are trying to earn a living, trying to make money, selling their bodies? What do we think is going to happen? Of course, things like this are going to happen. So policy-wise, I think this is a pretty good example of why the United States approach to prostitution, to sex work, just does not work.
Mm-hmm. All right. Darwin Von Graham, Ollie Winston, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for coming in to talk about it.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks.
You just heard the voices of Darwin Von Graham. He is a staff reporter at the East Bay Express, and Ollie Winston, who is freelance. They've been working together for years on investigations of the Oakland Police Department, and they have a sweeping narrative up on the East Bay Express website about the sex and prostitution scandal that they say is behind the abrupt resignation of Oakland Police Department Chief Sean Wendt late last week. We will link to that article from our website, kpfa.org. And if you're an Oakland resident, you may want to check out the Oakland City Council meeting tonight, where, by pure coincidence, civilian oversight of the police department is on the agenda.